Okay, so thank you and welcome back. Hello, everyone. This is Kevin Andrew Richards from the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign, here to host another episode of the Playing with Research in Health and Physical Education podcast segment that we've come to call Going Behind the Research. Rather than providing a forum to discuss research that is conducted in health and physical education, the Going Behind the Research segment focuses on telling stories that surround research that we read in scholarly journals. Globally, the segment aims to humanize research by providing a forum to discuss the motives that draw researchers towards topics and studies, challenges and successes experienced along the way, and lessons learned that transcend individual journal publications and impact future research decisions. Each episode features an interview with one or more members of an authorship team to discuss the stories that go behind the selected publication. We'll begin with a brief overview of the study, and then we follow a common list of questions with follow-up questions to facilitate an individual conversation each time. With that framing, I'm really excited to introduce Carla Liguetti and Juliana Ryan, who are going to be talking about the paper that's titled Everybody's Talking About Doing Co-Design, But to Really, Truly, Genuinely, Authentically Do It, It's Bloody Hard: Radical Openness to Youth Participatory Action Research. Thank you so very much for joining us. I know that it's always hard to connect, especially across continents, but I'm glad that we were able to do this.
Yeah, thanks so much, Kevin. I'm delighted to be here. And I just want to emphasize, you know, the importance of having podcasts, you know, talking about what's happening, you know, behind the scenes, you know, behind what we publish. I think as scholars, we do not have a lot of space to talking about the behind the research. Sometimes, you know, in conference we do, but how do we apply and get grants or find research opportunities? We don't talk a lot about that. How is the process to create a research team? You know, how we negotiate our personal life and also our research, you know? So I think we truly need those spaces. So thanks so much for hosting those episodes. So we are looking forward for this conversation. And I also want to acknowledge, you know, all research team in this project. So as you mentioned, myself, our mate, Juliana Ryan, but we also had Bill, Amy, Sarah, and Claire. So I just want to, acknowledge all research team here.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry. Go ahead, Juliana.
Oh, well, I was just going to say, so the focus for today is very much in keeping with going behind the scenes. We tried to surface that. And the members of the research team that we've talked about today are what we call the staff collaborators, because that's the focus. But this is youth participatory action research. And there is another wider team of amazing co-researchers that were part of this as well. But this particular focus today is just on the staff collaboration.
Well, that's wonderful. And I'm sure we'll hear a bit more of that as we, a bit more about that as we go through. So just to get us started here, if you could, before we get started going behind the research, please give us an overview of the study with a reminder that the article will be linked to the show notes of today's episode for anybody who wants to read more.
Yeah, thanks, Kevin. And I can start on that. So this project was part of what we call VU RISE. So Victoria University, you know, my university, they were awarded with $22 million to do a research, you know, and they were awarded, you know, from the Victoria State government. And then we had pretty much six hubs, you know, developed, and we had the educational hub. So six projects were in this educational hub. And what happened, I applied to be a research assistant in one of the projects. So that's the behind the research process here. So it's not a project that Juliana and I, we seek for a grant, but we were hired, you know, to be part of one of those educational hubs, in our case called Summer Gap. So as I mentioned, Claire Brown, you know, in Sarah Craig, they were, you know, the first ones to think about the summer gap. And then I read in there, and I put an application, you know, I read there was a collaboration between a museum, a school organization, and young people. And I thought, oh, that sounds really good. I put an application and I wrote the whole application should be a youth participatory action research, YPAR. So I pretty much, Kevin, I took the risk, you know, because I didn't know any researcher. I didn't know Juliana, you know, and was in a completely different area.
Wow.
So it was like with young people in transition, secondary, you know, school leavers. And then I remember I went to a presentation, you know, in my university, and then suddenly Juliana was there, Bill was there, Claire. So they were kind of, I believe, deciding if they would select myself or not. I remember pretty nervous, you know, and I present about bell hooks.
Yeah.
And maybe that's why, you know, Juliana said, yeah, this girl should be on board with us. So I got the position and was a risk because was outside my area, you know, was, you know, in something really new. But I was pretty happy that I took the risk and, you know, I got the position. So it was not a grant that we got. It was a big grant that my university, yeah, you know, was awarded. And then they opened positions and I said, why not? Yeah. And I'm really glad I did that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And from a physical education perspective, which is, you know, physical education and sport pedagogy, that's our discipline, Carla. Juliana, I understand that you have a different academic discipline. And I think one of the beautiful things about that is that when we're able to get PE people into positions like that, where our folks are collaborating meaningfully with other groups, I mean, I think that's good for the profession. I think it's good for higher education, that type of cross-disciplinary work. So very cool.
Yeah, absolutely. And as Carla mentioned, there was this history behind the project. So it ended before either of us joined it. It actually went back a couple of years. So before either of us was involved, Sarah and Claire, who were the project leads, they had been talking about developing a project that would actually have involved taking a group of young people overseas on an educational experience facilitated with another museum. And the whole focus of it was very much on who did they want to become. Developed. So this was the original summer gap was something quite different. It then morphed because the pandemic happened. And in our context, we had some of the strictest, longest lockdowns in the world. And so that brought particular issues around school completions and transitions out of school into the next step, whatever that looks like. So then that project that had its roots and leadership in one space moved into the VU Rise Education Hub, as Carla said, and became a YPAR, which was actually new to all of us. So you've given me way too much influence in the situation about who was hiring whom, because I was like Carla, I was brought in as a research fellow because I had a background in transitions into university. So education, and with a particular focus on informal settings is my background, and or the bit that connects to this. So we came into this project, and definitely bell hooks was, funnily enough, I was writing a paper drawing on bell hooks at the time. So when I saw bell hooks, that's like, excellent. But essentially, we all had to find a place in this project and redefine the project together.
Yeah.
And I think that's important for the openness, because in the end, Claire, as the project lead, essentially assembled us all and then watched as we reconfigured the project that she had previously designed. And I think that openness and an openness to go, let's try YPAR, is probably a good foundation for what's
there. Yeah, and I'm not going to be able to, I had it for a second and then my memory is just shoddy, but you said something along the lines of, we all had to find a place in the project and then work together to make the project our own. And I think that is a really neat way to kind of think about this type of work. It speaks to the need for people to come together, recognize you know, what they have to offer, but also where they're limited and where they can learn from and leverage the resources and assets that others provide. Really, really neat. So let's jump into the second question. So starting broad, what got you interested in this topic or the area more generally, and how does this fit into your broader lines of scholarly inquiry?
Yeah, thanks, Kevin. And as we were mentioning, you know, definitely why PARS, so Youth Participatory Action Research. When I wrote the application, I wrote to be a why PAR, and I was so glad that, you know, the methodology was considered. So knowledge is created with people, you know, and I think our paper is a reflection in our whole journey. So I have like 12 years of experience in doing YPAR. I think that's all what I know how to do, to be honest. You know, don't ask me to apply surveys. You know, I respect the diverse of research, but YPAR is pretty much, you know, working with communities. It's not research on people, but research with people.
Mm, yeah.
So most of my research has been in sport, but why not extending to education and now Juliana Arts, you know, community art organization. So I think we have that. The second point for me was in relation to the focus on young people and particularly diverse young people. I love working with diverse young people, you know, people passionate about, you know, struggling. You know, and I would struggling solidarity with young people towards social justice. I don't think in this project we had young people as diverse as we wish, but I think we would work with young people struggling with this narrow view of transition. And Juliana will be talking more about that. So it is unfair system, you know, the education system in Australia in most places, it is unfair.
Yes.
So how can we help young people that they are oppressed by the system? I'm passionate around that. And the third point, as Juliana mentioned, and Bell Hooks is here, Juliana. So I'm really passionate around understanding how we engage in YPAR. So the how is as important. What are the pedagogies in place? And this paper that we wrote, it is around, you know, how can we create the safe space where we can share knowledge there? So the what we do is important, but the how it is definitely important. And bell hooks emerge, you know, as a way to engage in YPAR. Mm. And I love studying the messiness that happens in those spaces.
Yes, love that. Love that. Juliana?
So, as I'd mentioned previously, some of my research had been around transitions into university. And one of the things that I've wanted to challenge and that we've come to a little bit more in this paper is that transitions are often talked about as something that needs to be smoothed for young people by expert adults, you know, smooth the way into university, into the workforce. That's basically the sort of how it tends to be talked about. And I'm really interested in the potential of education to change what it's possible to imagine, to be, to do, to become, all the things that linked really nicely with the premise of this paper. And I've worked in carceral settings with university students and incarcerated students and seen just, you know, all the potential that is there to become through education and to imagine yourself differently and forward from where you are in a given place. So that was kind of where it connected for me. But as I said, I'd never done YPAR.
Yeah.
And I'd worked on students as partners projects, which is kind of a similar ethos, but without the critical pedagogical underpinning that YPAR has.
Yeah.
So that was kind of the, I guess there were connections there, but there was a lot to learn. And in our research team, only Carla had the YPAR experience. So as emerges in our paper, that meant that we all had not only different experience levels, but probably understandings about what YPAR is and how it could look and all those things.
Well, and just how beautiful is that, though, from, you know, from a research team, from a team science perspective, to be able to bring together people who have these assets and resources to offer, And then you kind of put this beautiful puzzle together that is something that nobody on that team would be able to do individually.
Definitely.
So beautiful. So narrowing the focus a little bit, could you tell us about the circumstances surrounding this particular study and what brought you to these particular research questions? I know you kind of gave us a little bit of that background as you answered question one, but anything you'd like to add there?
Sure. So the focus just for today, because we're really referring back to going behind our paper,
yes,
looking at, we were particularly interested in how a multi-party facilitation team or team of facilitators, how do we collaborate, particularly in that circumstance where we're coming from different positionalities,
yeah,
experiences. And as we've already touched on, certainly for me and Carla, Bell Hooks and her work in engaged pedagogy in particular was an overlap. So we were always sharing papers with each other, particularly Carla and I, and very early on in our collaboration, as I mentioned, we were trying to work out how to define this project together with various degrees of experience with it. So Claire had been thinking about this project in one way or another for some years. Carla and I had kind of shown up, you know, in 2022 to work on it. But in that process of thinking about how we would work together, the Bell Hooks' work was so important that Carla and I really early on did a presentation for the wider group where we drew some connections between students as partners as a way of working, which is quite gaining prominence, particularly in Australian higher education and transitions, and Bell Hooks engaged pedagogy and, of course, WIPART. So from very early on, I think Carla and I were kind of learning together, and then we were sharing it with the wider team to build, I think, a conceptual framework, but also ways of engaging with each other. So a pedagogy for us as a team as well. And because of that, that's, I think, how we came to this question, because a lot of the work, apart from the actual work that we were there to do, to co-design the program with our youth collaborators, there was also a lot of work that went into facilitating us, our team, and building that shared understanding about what we were going to do together from all these different levels of experience and positionality. Carla, have I left anything out there that you want to add?
No, I just want to, because it's a behind the scenes, you know, podcast. I think we also should mention, we knew, you know, Kevin, we had in hands a methodological paper, you know, and we were like, why? We should challenge ourselves to go to a strong journal. So I think choosing the action research journal, we know is a strong journal in the area, is not in education per se, is not in PE. So also for myself and Juliana, a huge challenge, you know, thinking about going to action research. And then what we did, we mailed the editor. You know, you are the editor of several journals. You know that, Kevin. And then we ask, you know, do you think this methodological paper would fit in your journal? And it was amazing because Hillary was so, you know, the editor in Action Research Journal. She was really helpful.
Yeah.
And if you want to publish here, you have to show why, you know, this methodological way is such a unique way and has to be not just important for WIPART or the educational area, but you have to show the importance in a broad action research area. And I remember it was really scary, you know, seeing that email and trying to think about how can we better conceptualize paper in a way that would be publishing action research. So that was the behind the scenes, the risk and, you know, the opportunities created by trying to publish a methodological paper in a journal that it is quite strong.
And I commend you both and in your whole team for that. I think, you know, again, speaking from a physical education perspective, I think it's so important when our people connect and talk to audiences outside of our discipline. I think it helps people to understand us better. It helps to show our value as scholars to the broader, you know, educational and research communities. I think that those things are important, but I think that sometimes, you know, we kind of talk ourselves out of submitting to those types of journals, going to broader education or sports science type journals, thinking that the work that we do won't be appreciated or valued. And seeing examples like this, and I could name several others over the course of my career where I've seen, you know, other people from our field publish in, you know, major AERA journals, for example. You know, I think that's important, and that we look to those examples and continue to do that.
And we learned a lot along the way, it's fair to say, isn't it, Carla? Because we were pushed to really bring forward. So we're talking about behind, but we had to sort of bring forward how bell hooks helped us to conceptualize and you know, do our collaboration. So we learned a lot through that process as well of working with the reviewers and editor.
Yeah, and thanks a lot to bell hooks again, because what happens in the first review, you know, Kavi, bell hooks was not as strong there. So the whole concept of, you know, working together and having deep in conversations, they were there, but they were not named as such. So bell hooks, you know, and the concept of radical openness was how the second review we push, you know, to that conceptualize what we had done using a theoretical lens. And that's how our paper got accepted, but it was a hard first review that Juliana and I and the whole team we received. Yeah.
Yeah, and again, that just shows, though, you know, I think that if you get a good editor and helpful reviewers who are willing to work with authorship teams, you can take these papers and really elevate them in ways that contribute really meaningfully. And Juliana, your point is so well taken. I've learned so much going through the review process, and I'm grateful for the reviewers who have taken the time to educate me. So next question real quick, talk to us about the process of setting up this study and the methods that you used. What did you learn from a methodological perspective that you've carried with you beyond this individual study?
Yeah, thanks, Kevin. I will start with this one. So this paper is a methodological paper. So it is a behind scenes, you know, behind the research paper in some sense. I always love, you know, writing about the process, and that's definitely around the process. I think our main learning, as we were mentioning, is the radical openness. And for bell hooks, you know, radical openness is this deeping and loving conversations that we have with friends or mates. So it is also embedded in social justice. So it is a conversation about the unfair things that we see in the world, you know, in our thoughts and experiences. We talk a lot about our positionality in those conversations, you know. Myself, as you know, here in Australia, I'm considering a cultural and linguistic diverse scholar, Juliana White. So we have this uncomfortable conversation sometimes around our positionality, as we also had with young people, you know. So that's the space that we call radical openness, is a space where we can uncover bias, and definitely was one of the first strong learnings. So we together, we kind of reflect around our own bias and assumptions, and bias and assumptions about what is white power, but also what young people can offer or not in white power. You know, are they ready to co-design things with us? So we had those questions, and we had to challenge our own assumptions. So they are also resources of knowledge, as we are, you know. So in publishing, you know, in collaboration, the co-authorship with young people has been one of the main outcomes, you know, in our other papers, that show how we learn, you know, and we uncover our bias and assumptions. The second main, you know, findings, it is how we had to negotiate authenticity and accountability in the project, and navigating, you know, the institutional expectations that we have, all the external pressure. So we had this big grant. So now you have this big grant, and with big grants, we have to write reports to, you know, meet deadlines. And when we work with young people, we have to be driven, you know, driven with their own needs. And so how we negotiate those two points, you know, being authentic, you know, and bloody heart, as in the title of our paper,
yeah.
And then the accountability. And here, the whole team and the diverse experiences of the team, I think, helped us a lot. So those are the two main learnings, you know, challenge and uncover and challenge our bias and assumptions, and then negotiate authenticity and accountability.
It's so beautiful to hear you talk about that, Carla. Your words just drip with vulnerability and the need for trust. And the need for us to be willing to expose ourselves and to have difficult, critical conversations, because at the heart of what you're getting at, I think, what I'm taking from it, is that that's where the real learning occurs, when we're able to examine and re-examine our biases and think about the world differently.
Definitely. And if I can very quickly just add one of the key things. So I've already mentioned how Claire, who was one of the project leaders, had a vision with Sarah, the other co-lead, for this project some years ago, and we talk about trust. She also gave us a lot of trust in that she made space for us to reconfigure the project, as I said, together. So not only Carla and I, but as a team, she was part of that. So she, at a certain point, stepped out of active engagement, because the other role that she played was she was acting as an intermediary to some extent between us and the governance requirements of this, which were quite extensive, on this big project framework that we were part of. So I think that was really important too, Carla, wasn't it? That there was room for us to do this across the team, including, you know, taking into account the different power dynamics and histories that we had all had with it.
Yeah, and just to add on that, Juliana, that's different from my previous experience. You know, I always do the whole cycles of, you know, Wi-Fi by myself. That was the first time, you know, Kevin, that was working a team.
Yeah.
And honestly, institutions, organizations, they are always the barriers for most of my, in the last 10 years, I can name, you know, the amount of barriers that I faced with organizations and institutions. So I've never tried to negotiate as much as we had this time. And definitely was because we had a group of people with, the, you know, diverse perspectives and allowing us to negotiate. Because we have to. If we want to go to big grants, you know, it's still doing wipe out what I believe it's possible. We need diverse perspectives in helping to negotiate the challenge of working organizations, deadlines, neoliberal institutions, and so on.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. I think that if I could summarize all of the research that I've done in one sentence, that sentence very might well be institutions make it really hard. Organizations make it really hard. Yeah, you know, it's true. So this might be my favorite question to ask. Do you have any stories accompanying the process of completing this investigation that you feel comfortable sharing that give us a look under the hood? And bonus points, if you've got anything that can make us laugh.
I don't think this will make you laugh, but it's very on point.
Yep.
Talking about institutions and institutional leadership.
Oh, beautiful. Yep.
So we had a very tight time frame because it was, what we haven't actually mentioned is it was a 12-month grant. So we had to go through several cycles of this project and, you know, the action research cycles within 12 months. Anyway, and we had intensive workshops where we would work very closely together, very focused. But one particular workshop, we had some of the leadership within the broader project come to visit. And one of the things we spent a lot of time doing early on with our youth collaborators was trying to debunk the emphasis, which is really strong in Australia, about having a tertiary entrance score. So there's a particular number that you get when you come out of, if you come out of school the conventional way, that will then determine most of your pathways into university. What we were trying to do was move beyond that idea of transition being linear, or the ATAR, as it's called, that number being definitive of who you are or who you can become. Lo and behold, one of the leaders within the institution came to visit, who was also a parent. And made some references to the importance of this ATAR and then suggested we should, you know, why aren't parents involved in this? So inwardly, we were all kind of going, we spent a lot of time working around this, but it led to a beautiful moment where one of the youth collaborators came back and resisted that whole characterization and talked about the importance of being a youth collaborator space because it's their futures and they need to do that work. And it's not a space for parents. It's about becoming, you know, becoming you, which became the next iteration. And so out of this moment where inwardly, I think a few of us are going, oh my goodness, how are we going to redeem this? Came one of the best moments, I think, of the our collaboration so far. And actually that's part of a separate paper that was co-written with the youth collaborators that we talk about that as well.
Yeah, I mean,
that was a good one.
It warms me on the inside anytime adults honestly and sincerely recognize that youth have voice and perspective and seek to elevate that. That's beautiful. Carla, anything that you want to add?
No, I was just thinking, you know, as a result of our team collaboration, I invited everybody here to my place for a Brazilian barbecue.
Yeah.
Juliana, you might remember that. That was good. So lots of drinks, and Juliana is vegan. So I prepare her mushrooms. Remember that, Juliana? And I bought.
I do. I've got mushrooms.
Oh my God. Yeah.
Well, that's wonderful. We've just got a couple of questions left here. Based on this investigation, what did you learn about the research process that you can share with other members of the academic community and our listeners?
I'll go. I think what I learned is something I had probably had an inkling of, but how important it is to trust and engage with difference. And not because there were times in the process where I felt we needed more space and we didn't necessarily have it. There was a lot of sort of, but trusting the process helped the YPAR process is probably the thing I learned the most. And I think it enabled what we were able to achieve. So in future collaborations, I'm bringing that with me, just that greater openness to process. I've always cared about process, but I haven't always been able to trust process. Mm-hmm. So that was probably the big thing that came to me. How about you, Carla?
Yeah, I think I learned that it's possible to scale up, you know, YPAR and still keep the authenticity, what we want to keep. So it's not like working with the whole state, but we can still think about having a team of people together and benefit, you know, YPAR. So I learned that and trust and developing relationships definitely is central. I also learned how it's important to better conceptualize the work that we do. So I'm really an empirical scholar. So I love writing about the journey that I face with people. But I think sometimes, and I learn a lot in this process of trying to better conceptualize. So let's name that, you know, and the radical openness, and is that in the paper for everybody? It's the main learning in this, you know, journey. So I think I would in my future work, you know, pay more attention to the radical openness as well. The other thing that I learned in this process that I think other people can learn, it is how rich it is exploring other spaces. You know, so I am a P, you know, a scholar, but I also, you know, I do some work in sports, but why are we not exploring other cultural spaces? You know, so our next steps, for example, Kevin, it is doing Becoming You too, you know, running this project again.
Yeah.
That has a strong partnerships with museums, we wish. So we are seeking philanthropic grants, you know, so we are going to the art, you know, organizations as well. So I think we, as researchers, that we truly want to engage with authentic young people's voices, we should also be open to not being just in this silo of sport and PE, but how can we go to other cultural spaces? I tried education, and I was lucky with Juliana, you know, to teach me a lot about young people in transition in schools. But why not going to arts, you know, and other cultural spaces? So that was another.
And if I could just very quickly build on that, physical spaces as well. Mm-hmm. That was a really important aspect that we haven't yet talked about.
Yeah.
But our collaborations were happening in a physical space that was given to us by our cultural partner, the museum. So we weren't meeting in a classroom or anything like that. And that was another important aspect as well.
Wonderful. Thank you so much. Yeah, in physical space really does matter so much. I couldn't agree more. So before we close out the segment, is there anything else that you'd like to share about this investigation that we haven't been able to get to up until this point? So if not, then I think maybe not a total lie, but I told a fib before, because this is actually my favorite part of the segment. I think if I remember right, you know that some rapid fire questions are coming. I don't think I told you what the categories are. Okay, good. So that makes it a little bit fun. So because we're trying to get to know the stories behind the research, it's fun to end with some rapid fire questions to help us get to know you a little bit better. So I have six categories. Are you comfortable giving me your quickest responses?
Sure. And are we answering? Are we both answering? Are we answering for ourselves or are we answering for each other?
So it's so interesting. I love that you asked that question. You're the second, I think the second duo that I've had come on. The other duo that I had come on answered for each other. So do you want to try that?
Do you want to take the challenge, Carla?
We can. Yeah. And just to remember, because I listened, you know, the podcast that you had, they had, I think, 8 years, you know, working together. Juliana and I, we just met, you know, a year ago, but I think we should try. Yeah.
Okay. I love that. I love that so much. I almost asked you if you would, I thought about that. I thought about it before we started. I almost asked if you'd answer for each other. I love that you brought it up. Okay. So, first one, they're answering for one another, favorite color.
Red.
Blue. Is blue, yep. Jenna?
Well, the green, everything on the blue palette.
So, Carla, is yours red?
No, it is blue, actually.
Okay, so second question. Favorite animal?
Rabbit.
I would guess dog, because I know Juliana just got a puppy recently. Oh. Has to be a dog, Juliana.
Yes, but I also have a cat, so it's like equal. Was I right about the rabbit?
No, I love giraffes. So giraffes, my favorite animal. I go to the zoo and I just, with Tom, my son, I'm always all the time like, this giraffe, he's kind of liking giraffes, like, as I'm giraffe in law.
This is so fun. So a favorite season of the year?
Summer.
Sex education?
What?
That's not my favorite one, is sex education. That's why. And I didn't like in the first, you know, time, but Luisa, my partner, was like, nah, you have to watch that. And then after a few episodes, I'm like, all of it. So I finished all sex education. It's amazing.
I'm going to see what? Like, did you say season or series?
I said season.
Season.
Summer, spring, and fall, and you start talking about sex education, and I'm like, where is this going?
But we're all radically open here, so we just went with it.
Radical openness, come on.
Carla's favorite season of the year is sex education.
Sex education.
Favorite place?
How about yours, Juliana?
Favorite series? Your favorite season?
Series.
Yes, favorite series. That'd be wonderful.
Oh, gosh, now I'm going blank. It goes way back, but I like to rewatch it, is Jack Irish. which is an Australian series. It's like crime, and it makes Melbourne look really good, and it's funny, and it's heartfelt, and yeah. But it goes back probably to sort of maybe to 2012.
Mm.
But you might be able to stream it if anyone's interested. I can recommend.
Yeah.
I haven't watched Sex Education. My adult kids watch it, but they won't let me watch it with them.
Yeah. And my favorite season now, it is summer. Yeah.
She got that one.
Yeah.
Well, that's a fall.
Yeah, just because, yeah, it's always cold here in Melbourne. I remember when I got the job here, I packed all my bikinis and I arrived in the winter in Melbourne, Kevin. And I watch movies, you know, Australia is this summer, you know, country all the time. Now, it's just really cold. So, yeah, that's my favorite season.
Mm. Wonderful. So a couple of questions left. Favorite place on Earth?
Brazil?
I would guess Ireland.
Yeah, probably. Yeah,
yeah,
it's one of them. Yeah. Was I right?
No, not really.
Yet again. Give us seven.
No, I'm just kidding. You know. Yeah, well, yeah, that's a complicated answer. Yeah, I love Brazil, but I don't know if it's my favorite place. I think it's still places that I want to explore. I don't know if I have one place. Yeah, it's in the future.
I like that response. That's fun. Favorite food?
The Vietnamese vegan food that you ate last time with me. That's your favorite one, Juliana.
Well, almost, except I was going to say mushroom.
The burned one.
Barbecued mushrooms, Brazilian style.
Yeah.
What is my favorite?
Well, I said steak, because I have seen you enjoy a steak.
Yeah, I prefer seafood. Yeah, like I'm from the coast in Brazil, so we eat lots of seafood. Yeah.
Well, fun. So last question, maybe my favorite category, because the responses go all over the place. Favorite thing to drink?
Beer.
That's correct. Oh, that's like everybody knows that. Oh yeah, OP community, they do know that. For Juliana, wine?
Yes.
Ah, well, we end with both of you getting it right.
That's excellent.
So thank you again, Carla and Juliana. This has been such a fun and enlightening conversation. The idea of radical openness, that has my head spinning a lot, because I think about vulnerability and trust a lot, and I think I need to look into that a little bit more. So you've inspired me. Just as a reminder to everybody, the article will be linked in the show notes for today's episode if you're interested in reading more, and I definitely encourage you to do that. Thank you again, both of you, for joining us today, and I hope you have a great rest of your week.
Thank you.